All right, we are here live at the Knoll Showroom. This is episode 6. We are live and in person. The changing nature of physical space is what we're going to talk about to preface everything. We're live, camera, social distanced, and to say that we did utilize precautions coming in. We wore a face mask, and I have to mention my nice safety swag that I have on, TGC safety swag. So we will. In saying that, I will introduce everybody. My name is Tyler Peltzer. I'm from Greenford Construction. I'll be your host today. To my left over here is the beautiful Joanne Chan, who is principal owner of SCI Design, and the design that focuses on workplace design and innovation. Over here to my right is Jake Hirsch-Allen, and Jake is a master connector and social entrepreneur at the intersection of higher ed, workforce development, and data and tech, and also is the first LinkedIn Learning employee of Canada. So I'm saying that, welcome guys.
Thank you very much for having us.
No problem, in the beautiful Knoll Showroom at 109 Atlantic. So let's dive right in, and like I mentioned before, I wanna preface a little bit that of course we're in a current pandemic, and I want to start this conversation by prefacing that there are some challenges that we have to approach today and hopefully come to some solutions for the future. And being pushed into some uncomfortable situations, we see we need to start leveraging certain things like technology, but also acknowledging that the physical space is really where the communication, the collaboration, and the culture is born. So with saying that, I will send it over to Joanne. How are you approaching the change in nature of physical space, Joanne?
Thank you very much, Tyler. One of the things that we've been really focusing on is the reason why people like to be in an environment. So like going to a resort, your family gets together, there's a comfortable setting. People do actually get more focus and organized in a workspace. So one of the things that in the last decade, as you can imagine, there's various work trends about open concept, about enclosed office, the battle of open office, is the open office dead? So there's all these sort of ideas that came out of it and say, well, is technology gonna be impacting with AI, machine learning? So this is actually probably the biggest social experiment that we ever been in. And then I think one of the things that we found out is people do crave for space, not because just of culture, not just because of collaboration, but people need to feel they belong somewhere. So the isolation is actually not very good for mental health.
Right.
So one of the things that we've been approaching with our clients, with our colleagues, we've been talking a lot about the purpose of space. So instead of reimagining the space of work, reimagining the space of use and function and purpose.
Right.
And with that, we have a layer of humanity attached to it too, the emotional attachment to space that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us forget that we as human beings like to be together, and without, even with the social distancing, when Jake came in, he sat closer to me because
social
he felt,
creatures,
yeah,
indeed,
absolutely.
Right?
So space is definitely more important. So if you talk about the future of work attached to space, I think the expectation is that we have a different perspective,
mm-hmm.
but yet the main philosophy hasn't changed, is that how do we connect people, foster creativity, encourage innovation
yeah.
within an environment.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting too, because I thought this would be a cool expansion on our commercial office community by getting Jake yourself from exterior of our industry,
mm-hmm.
Your perspective too on some of the things you're seeing from companies to the environment itself, anything you can say in regards to changing the physical space and how we work together.
So thank you for having me. Honestly,
no problem.
I spend most of my time, as you noted, talking about tech and online education and higher education, and I rarely get to delve into space as a concept,
right.
But I obviously experience it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also, to some extent, passionate about it. My mother's an artist, I've collaborated with her, and so thinking about the aesthetics of physical space
mm-hmm.
has a perhaps greater emotional impact on me than many.
Right.
And tying the two together has become increasingly important. I, like many, as Joanne mentioned, miss being in the same place with other people.
Right.
I'm one of those who would, in a heartbeat, go back to working in an office.
Yeah.
And having three people in a tiny space in my home is really challenging as well.
Right.
So I'm dealing with the realities that so many others are. On the other hand, if one divides the population that's been affected by this pandemic in the developed world, it's basically in three segments. There's those like us who are able to continue our work from home or in some capacity. There are those who are essential workers and now have their kids to juggle. And then there are those who can't work at all. Mm-hmm. And for those lucky few who are able to work, we can think about these problems almost on behalf of the rest of the population because they're going to be coming back into similar circumstances. And I think that's part of our obligation, which is to say, if we're able to work and make money now, we have an obligation to be thinking about what does a better post-pandemic humanity look like. Mm-hmm. And I think thinking about it in terms of space is really interesting because I was having a conversation yesterday with the board of the Canadian Club, which I sit on. And interestingly, most of the members of the board are from banks or recruiting firms, sort of, you know, Bay Street VPs, SVPs, and they all saw themselves going back into the office.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I said, well, you know, the world of tech is not. Facebook, Microsoft, LinkedIn, they're all Accenture. My partner works for Accenture. We're all being told you're not going back into the office anytime soon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when you do, it'll be more flexible.
Right.
And I think that's actually probably a more realistic perspective.
Right.
I think thinking about this as not just a time when we're going to be required to change, but when we have the opportunity to change, including physical spaces and how we make use of them, and beginning to think about them in a more human-centric manner, exactly as you just described it, I think is going to be really important. How do we think about those spaces serving the functions we actually need instead of serving the functions that they've served for the past 100 years?
Absolutely.
When we don't live in the industrial age. We live in arguably the internet age. And I think those who've said, whether Satya was saying, Microsoft CEO, that 10 years of innovation have happened in 10 weeks.
Right.
Andrew Yang said 2 years and 2 months, whatever the actual numbers are. It's a lot of change really quickly.
Right.
And then the question is, what do you come back to? How do we come back to a world that is less fractured and where we can work in spaces in a more productive manner, in happier manner?
Yeah. It's interesting, too. I mean, the kind of the age of information and the age of sharing, and with that regards, you know, we have access to anything at our fingertips. Our phone is always right there, fortunately or unfortunately. So in saying that too, how do you guys see technology being utilized in the correct way as it pertains to still having that humanity aspect of offices? Maybe I'll push it over to you, Joanne.
I think one of our biggest challenges is technology, because technology has aided us to do more efficient, like work with efficiently, but also actually made us more isolated. So at the moment, we're very happy that we have those technology. If you look back in the last, you know, 15 years, if this happened then, it probably won't be as efficient as now, because we didn't have the same type of technology 15 years ago, as easily accessible to other people, or the common people, right? So, but then in reverse, I think people don't realize that we react differently when we're together.
Right.
So one of the challenge of, hopefully we can collaborate with more technology folks in the industry, is to actually elaborate more community knowledge sharing, because one of the things that we designers can't solve is that tactile experience versus a technology digital experience.
Yeah.
So I can sit here with you, and I might have another person on the side who are dialing in, for example, and you've been through those conference call before.
Right.
You know, seven people's in the meeting room, two people's on the conference call, on the phone, on the screen. They're often just left out. They're not even participating nor acknowledged.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we need to deep dive is how do we change that behavior? At the moment, we're very polite, we're more conscious, we have more empathy because we know that the person's there, but if you go back to, let's say, fast forward in the next 6 to 12, 18 months, we should be more aware that that interaction is as important as the person of interaction.
Right.
So I don't think there is a solution yet. We need to actually explore more and collaborate more, because one of the things that if you want to expand about technology is that we haven't done our job knowledge sharing. So there's a sector of technology, there's the sector of design, sector of product design, sector of governance and policies, and healthcare and all that stuff. So none of those things are tied in together right now. So if you look at, so one of the things that we've been doing in SDI is developing the happiness workplace. So we go, okay, there's some primary stuff, safety, emotional support, technology, so on and so forth. But now we said, okay, let's do it bigger. Let's bring in the physical and mental health, the actual functional requirement of operation, like actual doing work, the bottom line requirement, which is performance, branding and money-making devices that, you know, make the world goes around.
Yep.
But on top of that, can we layer sustainability? Can we layer actual, you know, human connection into that conversation and bring those things that the designer who actually are in control, we didn't realize that until this pandemic, I don't know why. We know the business owners, we talk to the financial decision makers, we talk to the consultant, which is engineers, environmentalists, or design makers who are actually making products and stuff like that. We talk to the constructor, which is, you know, you guys, mm-hmm. and we actually are the one who manage the expectation of implementation.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are the one who dictates the program, the criteria, the money, the budget, the schedule, and the connection of people,
mm-hmm.
we, as in the human designer, have the ability to connect all facets of
right.
people together.
Yeah.
At this point in time, I still think we're very fragmented. And I think this is the time when we have a little bit more spare time in our home, and we're discussing this today,
mm-hmm.
that we need to investigate more and find those connection points.
Right.
And soon to come, we're developing it right now.
Seems like we're on at least the right path with
yeah, exactly,
being in the same
absolutely.
Room and talking socially
yes.
distanced. Jake, are you seeing, coming from LinkedIn, which is one of the bigger tech companies in the world.
Totally.
And from the learning aspect, too, obviously that's trying to interact and engage with people more or less, you know, in front of their computer, is how do you see technology changing or adapting to make sure there's a human aspect and it interacts with us in the correct way? And even you mentioned modality to everybody within the same kind of aspect. So I want to bring that up and see what... you could elaborate.
Happy to. So as I was listening to Joanne, I was thinking about four examples from my everyday life just in the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go from sort of the quickest and the simplest to the most complex. But ever since I founded Lighthouse Labs, which is now the largest software development bootcamp across Canada, the need to figure out that space and how to ensure that people feel a sense of home or belonging
right.
or connection to each other and the actual space
mm-hmm.
has been essential. And has been completely thrown up in the air because Lighthouse is now entirely teaching online.
Right.
And so to get to those examples, the first is one that, again, everybody in that 30% who's working online from home is likely going to resonate with, which is I spend at least 10 hours a day on video calls right now.
Mm.
And rapidly, everybody that I respect is trying to decrease the number of calls we have on video,
yeah.
right? So we're moving further from other people because we're going to audio, so we can't even see those facial
right.
expressions or hand gestures, et cetera. But it's just that we're so tired of staring at a screen
fatigue,
all day.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Technology,
more
yeah,
stressful.
Video, technology fatigue.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And I don't think we thought a lot about that fatigue when we designed every conference room to have screens or every bedroom to have a screen in it.
Right.
So that's one very simple example. Slightly more complex, when I meet with senior leaders, if I'm going to meet with a governor or a premier, a president of a university, or I have to do it in person. If I really want their
mm-hmm.
attention,
absolutely.
It can't be on the phone or even on a video call, because the way to form that connection, to build that narrative that is
right.
not one-to-one but rather is the two together, is to become a part
absolutely.
Of their physical lives.
Yeah.
So how do we ensure we still have those when I used to get on a plane twice a week? I haven't been on a plane in a long time.
Right.
So that's sort of the simpler examples. I think the slightly more complex ones come from areas like education. If I'm a higher education or even a K-12 teacher or an administrator and trying to figure out how to program a classroom where we're going to maybe have students in it sometimes, students on video sometimes, there are some lessons that I think have existed for a very long time and that we probably haven't implemented due to the complexity of our human systems right now, due to unions and due to technological limitations and lobbying and other things. But practically speaking, we know a combination of online learning and offline learning is right for everybody.
Right.
Almost everybody learns best with some combination of the two, and the
yeah.
more support you need, the more it has to be in person, the less support you need, the more it has to be online,
right.
or it can be online. But for instance, that lesson has really important repercussions for space,
mm-hmm.
because it practically means we need to build more space for less advantaged people,
right.
and it costs more to have more space. And what we're seeing is likely the opposite trend. Post-secondaries, the ones that are going to be in person, when you go to college or university in person, it's because you've got the money. And in the future, if you don't have the money, then you're going to be online. But that's actually the opposite of what we need as humans.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So how do we start counterbalancing some of those trends? The last one that I wanted to give comes from specifically, I think, what will become the hottest area in higher education, period. If like 10
Save
years
the
ago,
best for last.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. I don't know if any
yeah.
other people will,
okay.
will agree, but
we'll
at least
see.
My personal view is 10 years ago, everybody was talking about these things called MOOCs, Massive Open Online Courses, Coursera, right. edX, et cetera. Interestingly, they're actually hot now, right? Because people are stuck at home during the pandemic.
A little more time on their hands.
Precisely. 5 years ago, everybody was talking about micro-credentials. How do you break up full four-year university courses into something shorter because they should be lifelong learning, they should be rapid, et cetera. Now, people are talking about assessment and accreditation. How can I actually tell that the person has those skills? And the reason they're asking that question is because you can't do it online. If somebody's got a foundational or a human or a soft skill, the only way to tell if they have it is by interacting with them, and usually in person. Maybe you can watch a video of them doing it, but practically, it's best if you're there in person.
For sure.
Which begs the question, how do you create testing at the scale of the hundreds of thousands to millions of people going through one massive open online course in a physical space with the pandemic, et cetera? So I think these are really challenging questions, but important ones for us to be thinking about. And maybe I'll close at least this section, this monologue, on what you were saying in terms of space and how emotionally it's really, really important. If we can start getting into the complexity of that from an interdisciplinary perspective, then we're going to get where we're going. But the problem is we haven't been willing to tackle these really complex questions. Mm-hmm. Like my favorite example of complexity from the pandemic is there is an argument that more lives were saved in China due to the improved environmental conditions than were lost due to COVID. If we really wanted to tackle with what, you know, what that means for the world, it could mean that we should be moving more quickly towards more LEED buildings because it'll actually have dramatically improved health outcomes. Right. Or air and noise pollution in offices should be much more of a priority than they are. But that's such of such complexity that I don't think it's rising to the level of our leaders. Instead, they're still responding knee-jerk to whatever the latest political fire is.
Yeah. And it's funny enough, we're sitting in the Knoll showroom and first LEED Platinum built by Greenford. There's a humble brag there for us here. I guess we want to now just kind of bring those two aspects together because, of course, space and the right space really fosters community, right? And we always want to, in anything in life, you want to find your place and the right community, and you want to build upon that, right? Upon the ideas and upon the the vision of the company, and you feel that you have a part in that. So I guess the question is, are there ways right now that you guys are seeing that space and technology can really come together and create a community for education, a community for a brand itself, right? So maybe we'll go over to Joanne.
So my focus obviously is workplace. So I work with a lot of people who work going to work. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we've been exploring, and actually clients are very open-minded. I think one of the things they're challenged with is to understand how much investment they have in real estate. Mm-hmm. And what are they going to do with the real estate? So they are really interested in expanding the horizon and talking about it with us. So one of the things that we're exploring with our clients is changing the philosophy from activity-based focus work mode to purpose spaces. So if you design a space that's purposeful and it's curated from an emotional lighting, air, sensory, they're all sensory, smells nice and so on and so forth, proper ergonomics, different posture. You can actually curate an environment that actually has different movement. So it's almost like thinking about us as a dance curator.
Yeah,
so if
like
you
that.
See the space itself as a palette, as a stage, right now our job has been curating palettes of dance move. And it's very exciting because we have two projects right now happening. Mm-hmm. And the client thinks that, wow, this is so interesting. And what we're trying to do is not just to do it, but to document it and actually share it.
Right.
Because the past years and years, I think knowledge has not been really been diverse, sort of open source in the architectural world. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time for us to all band together from a Canadian standpoint or a national standpoint or a North American standpoint, so on and so forth. There's so much research that we're not tapping into and actually exploring the conversation from Asia, which is an interesting thing, right? Mm-hmm. Asia actually has less cases than us because of their rapid, sort of response to the COVID-19. But at the same time, I think there are behavior that we haven't really learned to react, learned to perform because we were so capitally driven. We were like, we were just driving ourselves to the bone, trying to get the last dollar on the table. And maybe it's time to reevaluate from a humanities perspective, yeah, and put design and human first. That's my conclusion.
I think that's a completely good one. Agree. Jake, any comments towards that? That's beautifully put.
Yeah, Lauren. Exactly. I mean, I can't say it better, that's for sure. But I agree completely with the point. And I've usually been thinking about sort of the opposite because I'm in the world of tech. I've had an abundance of people asking, how do we create the communities that our spaces almost innately created? So my favorite example is Mars Discovery District. Mm-hmm. This is a community almost entirely built around that incredible physical space. But friends who run their online presence are saying, A, this time's been amazing for me, right? Now I'm the center of attention when it used to be the guys who actually ran or the women who actually ran the space. That's one. But B, how do I do it? So many of the mental associations are with running into somebody or with having an office next door or with an accelerator where people are pitching in the same space. Right. And those associations don't work as well online. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, TechTO, which is now, I think, the largest startup event in Toronto that happens on a regular basis, has thousands of people attending their online events because they've mm-hmm. managed to build the networking as well as the all of these things that we did offline are now happening online.
Yeah.
And there's even harder examples. I had a friend who consults to the WeWorks of this world, and almost all of them now, on how they can create community. Mm-hmm. Their problems have become a lot greater now that there aren't nearly as many people in their spaces. How do they provide value without that physical space?
Right.
I think one of the lessons from it is the amount of value that actually is in the physical space.
Right.
And that hasn't been discussed enough. I expect there's actually, this podcast is probably a great example, but there is an opportunity to expand much more on the conversation about the value of physical space mm-hmm. to humanity now that we're all desperately trying to recreate it without it.
Yeah, exactly. I think Joanne put it beautifully and you rounded it out perfectly. The question I think still, it will be out there. We need to continue to strive to answer the changing nature of physical space, how we leverage technology, what does that space do and purposefully have in mind for the people that are in that community and culture. And hopefully that brings this conversation, so to speak, green circle. I appreciate, Jake, your time. Thank you so much for being here. Joanne, always lovely as per usual. And saying that, I think we're done. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.